Now, it is my distinct honor to introduce Dr. Stephanie Creery. She is an assistant professor of management at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. She is also an affiliated faculty member of the Wharton People Analytics and a senior fellow of the Leonard Davis Institute of Health Economics. Her research focuses on the identity and diversity work that allows leaders to improve the quality of relationships across differences in the workplace. Her talk today is entitled Holding On to the Virtues in Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Work in the Professions. I'm super excited about this. Welcome, Professor Creery. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kenneth. It's my honor and pleasure to be here with you all. Happy Friday from Philadelphia. So by I think training and expertise, I'm a diversity, equity, and inclusion scholar and an identity expert. And I'm so thrilled to have an opportunity to actually begin to bridge some of the work that I do on a daily basis, both in my own academic pursuits, but also in advising companies. I'm happy to be able to bridge that with this larger conversation around character. And so for me today, I've chosen to talk about this through the lens of the virtues. So I'm going to go ahead and get started by just telling you that as we begin to think about this topic today, I want you to not only center yourself as a human, I want you to center yourself as a professional who has many things to grapple with in the context of everyday work life. And certainly increasingly so these days, we see that one of those things is understanding our role in a larger conversation related to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and what we can do to help facilitate not only our personal goals on this topic, but those of the communities to which we belong, whether those are our workplace communities or our surrounding communities in our home environments. And so let me just begin by suggesting to you that our professions, and our identities are both meaningful. So what we know from scholarship is that our professions can be an important source of meaningfulness for us, both in the context of our lives broadly, but also in the context of our workplace experiences. Our professions and our professional identities guide our behavior in the workplace. So you can think of them as motivators of sorts. And we know that we as individuals evaluate our own sense of worth and competence based on our professional identities, and that our identities and this sense of worth and competence can be an important source of well-being, esteem, and pride. So what do I mean when I'm talking about professional identity? Well, what I'm talking about is this idea that we develop a subjective, so a felt sense of ourselves in one or more professional roles. So many of us have multiple professional identities at one time. You can think about this as if you are a person who, for example, is an engineer, but you also have managerial responsibilities. Those might feel like two different professional roles combined into the same person. And for many of us, we've shifted our professional identities over time. So maybe we were in one profession. I used to work in healthcare prior to starting my PhD. And then certainly once I became a professor, I decided that I could no longer enact that professional identity that I had as a healthcare provider. But our understanding of ourselves in our professions, that's something that does develop over time. And we become to understand who we are vis-a-vis our professions through a process that we talk about as a negotiation. So what do we mean by negotiation? Well, we're talking about the fact that we're recognizing that it's not just ourselves sitting in a space by ourselves deciding who we want to be when we grow up or who we want to be tomorrow. There is a larger social context. There are other people who have values, who have standards, who have a process that we call socialization that does necessitate some, if you will, some standard set of values or principles that are aligned with what the profession demands of us. But that doesn't mean we're totally beholden to what others want us to do and who they want us to be. We can individualize ourselves in a profession in many different ways, just like we can individualize ourselves as a member of any demographic group or any organization in ways that we choose. But I would say the operative idea here is that we are talking about a negotiation between ourselves and the broader social context and workplace context in which we're situated. When we begin to think about professional identity in the context of diversity, equity, and inclusion, here abbreviated DEI, I want to talk about this as the opportunities, but also some of the challenges in, as we relate these two concepts. So one of the opportunities that diversity, equity, inclusion conversations bring us is this understanding that many of us want to be known and understood for what makes us unique. For us as individuals, for I want to be known as being, you know, Stephanie, and I want you to know who Stephanie is as a person. But at the same time, we all want to belong in some way. We don't necessarily all want to belong in the same way, but in some way, we all have this desire to belong to something that is not just ourselves, that is some sort of entity, whether that's a team, whether that's an organization, whether that's a community more broadly. And so when we're talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion, we're simultaneously recognizing this need to be distinct or unique, and also this need to feel like we belong as well. And so what our research on this topic tells us in the field that I belong to, organizational behavior, is that when we're able to effectively balance people's needs for uniqueness and belongingness, that outcome can result in powerful experiences such as strengthened work engagement and commitment to our workplaces and our work organizations. But this isn't without challenges, right? Some of the challenges that we know is that there is a certain expectation that we as individuals will, quote unquote, fit into our organizations and fit into our organization's values. One of the challenges around this whole notion of cultural fit is that it can, to some extent, reduce our ability to individualize, to present ourselves as authentic individuals, personalized beings in the workplace. And that in some cases, when really not as helpful as it could be, this notion of cultural fit can motivate us to cover or hide in some respects, aspects of our valued authentic selves. And so what we know from research is that this propensity to cover in order to fit in with what's deemed culturally acceptable in our organizations can actually produce negative implications for what companies are trying to accomplish from a diversity, equity, inclusion perspective. And so as a result, companies miss many opportunities to grow and learn and capitalize on the benefits of DEI that they're really seeking to gain. So with that said, as we progress throughout our time together this afternoon, I want to talk to you more specifically about how do we hold on to our sense of ourselves, but our sense of ourselves as being virtuous in our professions. And what does that mean? And I will unpack what it means to be virtuous or to have a virtuous professional identity and what the virtues are that allow us to not only be the professionals that we want to be, but do the diversity, equity, and inclusion work that is so important in order to be able to create more equitable, more just, and just more functionally effective organizations and workplaces. And so it goes without saying that there are a certain number of benefits and challenges in doing diversity, equity, inclusion work. It is both an opportunity, but also a challenge to create cultures in which people can effectively incorporate different aspects of themselves. And it's hard to do that in a way that is both individually meaningful and also meaningful to our organization. So both an opportunity and a challenge. Even though it's so important to begin to develop and implement diversity and equity inclusion practices and policies, just having a bunch of policies and procedures and policies at our disposal is not enough to be able to create many of the outcomes. So they are a foundational tool, but they don't just make diversity, equity, inclusion meaningful on their own. We do need to be able to create a process through which these things can actually be useful. And this whole idea of being able to foster and sustain any professional identity, let alone what I will submit to you as a virtuous professional identity, through and in relation to diversity, equity, inclusion work, that actually can be very challenging. But when it does happen, it can be a generative, a productive, a meaningful experience, not only for us as individuals, but for our workplaces more broadly. And so let's unpack this idea of a virtuous professional identity, What am I talking about? Well, I've already talked to you about what a professional identity is. It's a sense of ourselves in a profession, that self-relevant meaning that we develop that's negotiated between our profession, our organization, and our own sense of who we want to be when we grow up. When we have that professional identity and when it's actually infused with things that are strengths, characteristics and qualities that we deem good or that are considered good for us, that's what a professional identity is when we hold on to the goodness, the characters, the strengths, and the qualities that are associated with the virtues and character strengths. And so there are six core virtues that have been identified by the amazingly talented Peterson and Seligman. And this is from their work in 2004. It's a wonderful resource. And what I'm going to do for you here today is to apply their framework, their six core virtues, to the topic of diversity, equity, inclusion, to invite us to think much more carefully around how we can continue to develop ourselves and our virtuous professional identities in and through DEI work. So here are the six core virtues that Peterson and Seligman identified: courage, justice, humanity, temperance, transcendence, and wisdom. And we're going to walk through each of these and apply this to the context of DEI work throughout the rest of our time together. So let's start with courage. By definition, courage is referring to the emotional strengths, keyword emotional strengths that involve the exercise of will to accomplish goals in the face of opposition, and that opposition can be external or internal, okay? So to the extent that we want to become more courageous, Peterson and Seligman suggest that there are four characteristics that we need to be developing in order to achieve this virtue of being courageous. They're listed here for you: bravery, persistence, integrity, and vitality. Bravery is this idea of not shrinking in the face of threat, resistance, or challenges. Persistence being this idea that we're going to continue moving in a forward direction in spite of any obstacles that we may be facing. Integrity is that we're persisting in a genuine and sincere way. And vitality is that we're approaching our tasks, our work, anything that we are asked to do with a great sense of excitement and energy. So these are the characteristics that we need to have, according to Peterson and Seligman, in order to become more courageous. So let's think about courage in the context of DEI. So let me talk to you about the common narratives. So these are the things that often we say or other people say that stand in the way of us becoming more courageous in DEI work. So perhaps you have heard yourself say this or heard someone else say any of the following three things. This is too hard. I'm just not really sure whether this will matter in the end. They just don't get it. I have so much other work to do besides this, okay? And so if we're trying to counter these common narratives, what we're really trying to do is allow the virtue of courage to manifest positively in DEI work. But that's not magic, right? It actually takes work, which is why I keep saying DEI work, but it also takes work to be more courageous. So what do we need to do? We need to learn to embrace uncertainty and ambiguity, because the very notion of diversity, equity, inclusion, those words can feel ambiguous and the outcomes are often uncertain. Progress related to diversity, equity, and inclusion is very slow. And so being able to persist, even when you know it's going to take a long time to gain meaningful progress in a DEI capacity, that becomes really important, and particularly in the face of resistance. Speaking truth to power, this idea that many of us feel that we are not necessarily the person who is going to create large scale transformational change in our organizations, but being able to present a conversation to those in power that helps them to challenge their own beliefs on whether or not DEI is important takes courage. And certainly this idea of going all in, you know, putting not only your best face forward, but putting your best energy forward. That's what it takes to be able to develop courage to in the context of DEI work. So I could certainly talk at you for the next 30 minutes, but I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to invite you all throughout our time together to participate in different polls. And so we're going to start with poll one here. And so you should be able to see that on your side. And I want you to consider the place in which you currently work. I want you to answer this question around the idea that leaders and managers show that they value courage in DEI work. Would you say almost always? Would you say sometimes? Or would you say never? Great, we're doing great. Tells me that 60% of you have voted. Excellent. That's greater than the participation in many of my academic research surveys. So I think we're doing a great job. All right, I'll give it another second or so. Slowing down, okay. Going once, going twice. I'm gonna go ahead and end this poll. And I will share the results and hopefully you can see them on your side. I'm gonna go ahead and write a note down here for myself and you might wanna do that as well. So with respect to courage, 26% of you said always. With respect to leaders and managers always showing that they value courage in DEI work, 69% of you said sometimes and 5% of you said never, okay? I'm gonna stop that for just a moment and I'm gonna keep us moving through the next virtue, which is justice. So what is justice? Justice has been defined by Peterson and Seligman as civic strengths that underlie healthy community life. And so if you're trying to become more just in your actions and in your being, several characteristics are needed in order to become more just. Citizenship, so being a good citizen, which means doing your share, practicing fairness, not letting your biases get in the way of things you're trying to achieve and other people's success, and leadership, being able to organize or take responsibility for organizing tasks and events, but also taking responsibility for making sure that they're executed well. So what are the common narratives that can stand in the way of justice in the context of DEI work? Well, let me tell you what your voice might have said or someone in your vicinity's voice might have said. Well, they aren't doing it, so why should I? Isn't it biased to pay attention to people's differences? I'm tired of having to organize all of the DEI events. Okay. So if we're trying to become more just and allow justice to manifest more positively in DEI work, here's what we're trying to accomplish. We can, one, adopt a pay it forward mindset, meaning that perhaps this is about allowing ourselves to create better organizations for the next generation of workers. We can acknowledge that differences to understand where gaps in fairness exist. So understanding that it's important to look at our differences because that helps us to reveal gaps in equity when we begin to look between the categories. And even though our work might not be the work that creates the transformational change, there's this concept of small wins that is very important and seeing ourselves as perhaps the catalyst for getting the conversation started with respect to DEI. And being able to speak up when others are silent. These are characteristics and these are things that we could build in order to create more just workplace and develop ourselves as more just in the context of our professional identities. All right, so now we have poll number two. So for poll number two, consider the place where you currently work. Answer, best to the best of your ability. Leaders and managers show that they value principles of fairness in DEI work. And let's see what you said. Okay, so 29% of you said always, 64% of you said sometimes. So that's about the same as the previous. And a few more of you said never. Okay, moving along. Let's move to our third virtue, which is humanity. So humanity is defined by the interpersonal strengths that involve tending and befriending others, okay? And so if we're trying to develop more humanity and our sense of being people who value humanity, what we're really trying to do is to develop our capacity for love. So our ability to reciprocate caring and sharing in relation to other people. We're trying to develop our capacity for kindness. So our ability to value helping and taking care of others. And we're also trying to develop our social intelligence. So knowing ourselves, certainly, but also knowing others and what makes them tick. And so what can stand in the way of this in the context of a diversity, equity, and inclusion? These are common narratives that often get in the way. This is just a job. No matter what you do, some people will just never care. And so if we're always trying to become more positive with respect to ourselves at work and certainly allow this virtue of humanity to manifest positively in DEI work, then it takes us all becoming more community motivated and speaking to people in their language. Now that can mean their native language, whether that's Spanish or Chinese or English or American Sign Language. That could be helping people to understand based on how they understand the world works, what we're trying to achieve. So we often see this in the context of diversity, equity, inclusion, people adopting like a business case for diversity, equity, inclusion to help people who are business or financially or profit motivated to understand why this is meaningful. And certainly that's controversial in and of itself, but that is just an example of how we begin to help people to see things through their lenses and not just our own if we're really trying to be more humane in our DEI work. And so let's take the next poll. Okay, so consider the place where you currently work. Leaders and managers show that they value humanity in DEI work. This is the highest participation yet. All right, let me go ahead and show you the results. So in this group, 45% of you said always. That's incredible. That's so much greater than the others. We can reflect on that later, maybe in the Q&A, but 47% of you said sometimes, and then 8% of you said never. So I like that never percentage is staying small. That's great, that's great. Okay, so let's move along to our next virtue, which is temperance. This is defined as strengths that protect against excess. So if we're trying to achieve this virtue of temperance, we're practicing or we're learning how to become better at forgiveness and mercy, which means accepting others' shortcomings, even though that's difficult. Humility and modesty, not seeking the spotlight, which is really hard when organizations value self-promotion and the whole nature of competition is based on ranking systems. Prudence, being careful about one's choices, and self-regulation, this idea of being disciplined in what you're doing. And so what are the narratives that often stand in the way of achieving temperance? Perhaps you've heard people say something like, the last time I tried, they openly rejected this idea, i.e., I don't feel like trying again. We've made many, many top companies for diversity lists, so patting ourselves on the back. Sometimes you just need to say it like it is, no matter how it makes them feel. But really, if we're trying to achieve temperance in DEI work, we're really trying to give people a second chance, acknowledging that each of us enters a conversation about diversity, equity, and inclusion from a different place. Some of us have been learning about diversity, equity, inclusion since we were children, and some of us, it didn't become something that was talked about until we became people who were of some sense of success in organizations. We became advanced in our careers. And so allowing people the opportunity to come into this conversation over time is deeply important if we're really trying to observe or practice or promote temperance. So organizations are very good these days at applying for diversity, equity, inclusion awards. And the reasons why many of them do this is because that is a motivator. Extrinsic rewards are a motivator for many people. But what we know is that there's not necessarily a strong correlation between being rewarded for diversity, equity, inclusion, and actually creating more equitable and inclusive workplaces. So just because you've been awarded, oftentimes these awards are determined based on how much you're doing, not on how what you're doing is creating equity and inclusion. And so thinking more about seeking outcomes versus just seeking awards and notoriety becomes increasingly important in this space. And then this idea that delivering negative feedback is always tricky, especially when it comes to helping someone to understand that they are not the most inclusive manager. So how do you deliver that feedback in a way that allows you to take the perspective of somebody who's always going to believe that they are fair, who's always going to be that they're inclusive, and practicing empathy and perspective taking in that regard? So let's go to our poll for temperance. Really excited to see what your workplaces are like. Okay, so consider the place where you work. Leaders and managers show that they value temperance in DEI work. All right, so what did you say? 20% of you said always, 66% of you said sometimes, and 14% of you said never. So now that never creeped. I spoke too soon. I was so happy that with the first four, we stayed below 10% on the nevers. And then now when we talk about temperance, we're getting to this place of where more people are saying never. Although the sometimes is relatively operating in the same band across many of these same categories. Okay, let's move on to number five, transcendence. So this is the idea that we're talking about strengths that forge connections to the larger universe, however you define the universe, and provide meaning. And so if we're trying to achieve or practice or develop our sense of transcendence, there are several characteristics, at least five, that are needed in order to achieve this virtue. Appreciating beauty and excellence in all things, no matter how small or large. Taking time to express thanks for even seemingly small gestures. Believing that good can be brought in the future. Seeing the light side. Now, that doesn't mean ill humor jokes. It means being able to see the light side in a lot of what we are doing. And believing in some sense of a higher purpose. That doesn't mean a religious purpose, though it can. In some case, it means believing in something just larger than yourself and some purpose just larger than your own needs. And so what are the types of things that people often say that can help us to understand they're struggling with this sense of transcendence? When they're talking about diversity, inclusion, equity, inclusion, they might say things like, well, this isn't rocket science. They are getting paid, i.e., so that's why they should do it. We've been here before and nothing's changed. So we've been doing this diversity, equity, inclusion work a long time. Doesn't matter. Nothing ever changes. And so if we're trying to enable this value or this virtue to manifest positively in our DEI work, we're trying to recognize that it really does take a lot of skill, experience, and expertise to create meaningful change with respect to diversity, equity, inclusion. We do need to make sure we're thanking everyone for their contributions, not just the people who have opted out for a long time and are now opting in. But there are people who have been doing diversity, equity, inclusion work long before it was, dare I say it, cool, right? Or a sign of the times. And those individuals deserve all of our thanks for persisting and keeping everything going, even when they didn't have a lot of support on their side. And then I think as we're trying to talk about transcendence when it comes to DEI work, we're really trying to appreciate the journey. So the fact that perhaps we started 20 years ago and now we're all having a great conversation about this, even though the conversation comes with bumps and bruises, that's something to be grateful for. And it's certainly something that allows us to begin to understand the larger meaning, the larger purpose of what we're trying to accomplish. So the journey, not necessarily the destination. All right, poll number five. Leaders and managers show that they value transcendence in DEI work. Okay, so 28% of you said always, 58% of you said sometimes, and we're back at that 14% for never. Thank you. All right, sorry about that. Let me move us to the last virtue, which is wisdom. So when we talk about wisdom, we're talking about the cognitive strengths that entail the acquisition and use of knowledge. And so if we're trying to become more wise, we're thinking about our capacity to develop our results, or our abilities around creativity. And so when we're talking about creativity, we're talking about our capacity to think in novel and productive ways. How are we developing a sense of curiosity, our zest for exploration and discovery? Are we becoming more open-minded, and what are we doing to cultivate that characteristic to be able to examine things from all sides, not just our own? What about our love for learning? How are we nourishing that? How are we gaining new skills and knowledge? And what about our perspective? How are we learning to look at the world in many different ways, in ways that make sense to us, but also being able to understand how they might make sense to other people, which might not necessarily be the same ways in which the world looks to ourselves. And so when people are struggling with this virtue, what we see is paralysis, as I like to explain it colloquially, but perhaps these narratives ring a bell. Well, XYZ company does it like this, so that's just how we should do it. It's easier if we just do it the way we've always done it. And so if we're trying to become more wise as workers and as organizations with respect to diversity, equity, inclusion, we're trying to not just copy something or do it the way that we've always done it. If there's the capacity for us to learn more, if we experiment and if we're curious and if we take different perspectives. So that means collecting different types of data. Obviously, as a scholar, I really love data. I love qualitative data and quantitative data. And I believe you learn different things about diversity, equity, inclusion by looking at both types of data. We often understand the experiences of people who are underrepresented or in the numerical minority by looking at qualitative data, because oftentimes, because they're in the numerical minority, quantitative data can't effectively capture who they are and what they're experiencing. So being able to look at many types of data can help us be more wise with respect to diversity, equity, inclusion. Experimentation, again, as somebody who's an organizational scholar and social scientist, this is what we do. We try things out. But I would say a lot of us, because of that fear of ambiguity or uncertainty in general, but also on this topic, it becomes hard to feel comfortable experimenting. But the reason why so many organizations have so many great DEI initiatives is because they did experiment. They stretched themselves into the unknown. They took a great leap of faith into the unknown, not knowing if it was going to work. And certainly, sometimes it works, sometimes it's not the outcome that you desire, but being able to modify what you're doing based on feedback is critical as we're trying to become more wise in our DEI work. And so for our last poll, let me take us to number 6. Okay, so let's talk about your workplace. Leaders and managers show that they value wisdom in DEI work. And let's see what you said. Okay, so this is the highest percent of always. 36% of you said always. 55% of you said sometimes. And we're back under 10%. 9% of you said never. Thank you all so much. It's great data to have. I think it's always a great experience. I know Zoom land has been a place where many of us have lived for the last year. I always think it's great in the context of conferences, but also I also teach for a living, college students and MBA students. It's nice to be able to see how the other people feel in your environment. I actually feel like this has been introducing polls into all of my talks, whether that's working in the classroom or at conferences or working with companies. That is a very nice way of practicing inclusion and creating a sense of community and belonging when we're feeling inherently disconnected from other people, given the virtual format. So thank you all for letting us know how you're feeling. So I want to end, before we open it up to question and answers, just with a call to action. I've spent the last 15 years of my work life trying to understand and create interventions, and I think overall motivate people to feel positive about the topic of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And as you can imagine, that has not been an easy thing to do. It has definitely been, I spent much of that time facing a great deal of resistance from people who thought I should be spending my time doing something else or studying something else. I would say there's been an extraordinary amount of doubt. And every time that there's major social unrest, like there has been for the last 5 years, but I think more recently with respect to racial injustice, and that's beginning to magnify in ways that I have not seen in my lifetime, I will say that it's not always easy for me to maintain the sense of virtuousness in my own professional identity as a professor, as a scholar. But I have to tell you that I am so inspired by all of the work that various individuals and institutions and organizations have done over this past year and have committed to doing as we're trying to create, in this case, a more racially equitable and just world. I am disheartened by the continued violence against Black and Brown people and all of the violence against Asian and Asian American, the Pacific Islander community. And I am hopeful, though, that if more of us are to be able to engage virtuously in our professional identities in the context of DEI work, that many more of us will feel safe, will feel included, will feel like we belong, and will feel like we too can be successful, not just as professionals, but as people who really do want to live a life well lived. And so I'll just leave you with these closing thoughts, is I want you to seek opportunities to engage virtuously, but also emotionally in DEI work. There's a range of emotions that we all experience, even those of us who have been doing this for a long time, as we engage in this work. But engaging virtuously and also feeling this wide range of experiences, it is necessary and it is important for enabling all of these actions and experiences that we've had recently to outlast the current moment that we're all sitting in now. So I thank you so much for your attention and I look forward to hearing some of your questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Curry, for that informative and inspiring talk. We're really grateful to have you with us. We do have time for about 15 minutes of Q&A, and I see that some questions have started to come in. If you would like to ask a question to Professor Curry, there's a Q&A box at the bottom of your screen. Please feel free to type a message in, and we'll try to get to as many questions as we can in the time that we have. But for now, I'm going to go ahead and just jump in with our first question. And this question comes from Richard Wilkinson, who asks, what are the settings, the questions, and the desired outcomes of the DEI conversation in the workplace? And what are the practical measures of progress in workplace DEI efforts?
Yes, this is a big question. This is one that I've been working on for the last 3 years. And fortunately, we're finally reaching a place of where in May of this year, through my work with Wharton People Analytics, but also an MBA team that has included more than 10 graduate students who are in our Master's in Business Administration program at Wharton, as well as a doctoral student and my colleague, faculty colleague, we are actually answering this question. It will live in an academic journal one day, but we've decided to preemptively share practical insights, which are very much in the spirit of answering Richard's question, because this is like the question of the day, is what should we be doing and what are we trying to accomplish? And what our project is focusing on is does any of this stuff work? So I wanted to give you just a little bit of a backstory here. And it's when we set out to do this work 3 years ago, it was because I was actually tired of people asking me, does diversity, equity, and inclusion work? And I, at that point, had been doing this for 12 years. And I think intuitively, experts on this topic felt that this stuff was important because why else would they be spending all this time and energy putting mentoring programs into place, unconscious bias training, you name it, all the things that are done, right? And so what was very clear to me based on the start, the initial research, which started off as interviews with experts, was that while we were able to unearth about 100 different things that companies across industries were doing to manage diversity, equity, inclusion, there wasn't a lot of measurement being done to assess whether those activities were actually contributing to outcomes. If there were any outcomes that were being measured consistently, that was work engagement. But what I learned is that in many of these organizations, there's a broader workplace engagement survey, but it looks at a lot of things and measures a lot of things in terms of how it affects your engagement, so your connection to work. And oftentimes each group in an organization is, in a sense, negotiating for space in this survey. So it means that the diversity, equity, and inclusion group only has the capacity to ask 3 questions about diversity. And then when the data are being analyzed, to see whether those 3 things, which are very broad and generic, happen to drive your engagement. And so because we were doing an academic project, and you know, it becomes a little bit easier to ask people 20 minutes worth of survey questions, we expanded our list to a broad array of outcomes. I can't name them all for you here because there are about 13 of them, and my memory is good, but not that great. Engagement is one of them, but we also look at various forms of speaking up behavior, speaking out against bias, speaking up to suggest ideas that are supposed to help the organization move forward, and speaking up broadly in with respect to supporting diversity strategy. There are also things like job satisfaction and turnover intent that can be measured as well, helping behavior, belonging, the extent to which you perceive the climate is inclusive. So I think I've named a lot of them, but what our research is doing is looking at the variety of practices that companies can put in place. And we're trying to assess the relationship to those outcomes, in a sense, answering the question of which practices drive belonging, which practices drive job satisfaction, which practices will help reduce turnover intent. So Richard, I hope that answers your question, but I would say look out May 2021 through Wharton People Analytics. We'll release this report and you'll be able to read more about this in detail.
Wonderful. That's exciting. That's really great to hear, Stephanie. Before I read the next question, I just want to read a comment that I think is really delightful. This is from Josie, and she says, thank you so much for this. I'm a 50-year-old woman and not an academic. You have given me a framework to articulate my ideas and feelings about this, capital letters, very important issue. I believe I'm better prepared to be courageous, authentic, and wise. So just wanted to pass that along. To our next question, and this is from Erin Miller. And she asked, when you look at the polling data that you just collected from this audience, does it align with the virtues that are generally emphasized or not emphasized in workplaces? What does it tell you about our strengths and the places that we need to grow?
So this is a wonderful question, Erin. And I will have to tell you that this was an experiment for me. In doing this presentation for you today is understanding how to link these things. I think this is an opportunity for a study that helps people to begin to understand DEI in terms of the virtues. I have not seen, which is why I think I wanted to construct this presentation. I'm also writing this presentation up in the book that will be on this topic. I think this is a great opportunity to ask those questions. But if I think broadly about virtues being practiced or not in the context of my data, I would say that, you know, we talk about courage a lot with respect to diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I would say, as I've been reading CEOs' statements in the last year of what it will take to begin to act upon notions of equity in ways that we haven't done before, I've seen a lot of mentions of courage, right? So to me, it feels like that word is being used much more frequently than perhaps I would have seen outside of the DEI expert context. So DEI experts often, when they're talking about trying to engage people, they're trying to say, you need to be courageous. But to hear all the CEOs talk about, we need to be courageous as a community, that to me feels a bit new. Fairness certainly is a topic that permeates diversity, equity, and inclusion. it is very hard to understand what is fair, because what is fair to one person doesn't feel fair to another, but it continues to be a dilemma and an opportunity. I think this notion of, temperance, this idea of being able to understand it's important to be lauded, for what you're doing. That's important, but it has to be about more than that, or else organizations become complacent. So I guess what it is I actually see elements of these in the work, but we don't have a clear understanding yet of how these, the extent to which, or the frequency by which these virtues are actually showing up in relation to DEI in the workplace. I think at this point, the anecdotes that I offer you are sort of the best examples of how this works. Thank you for your question.
Great, thank you for that answer, Professor Creary. Our next question is from R. Wiggs, who asks, what practices seem to have an impact on retention? We are recruiting, and I assume R. Wiggs is talking about maybe as an employer, we're recruiting well and responding to clients, but how can we do a better job retaining fantastically talented people?
Yeah, so it depends on, which people are you trying to retain, right? So to some extent, as we begin to have a conversation about diversity, equity, inclusion, what we have to acknowledge is that standard practices for retention in terms of offering people greater salary, right? And a promotion doesn't always retain women and people of color, right? To the same extent that it might retain someone who doesn't identify with one of those groups. And that is because we know that being in a workplace in which you feel like you're included and you belong has a much stronger effect on people's workplace experiences if you're in the numerical minority. So let me say that differently. For women and people of color, and for people who come from marginalized, social categories who are LGBTQ, there's a stronger relationship between feeling like you belong and feeling like you're included and your intent to stay. So it's not that if you're a man or if you're white that these don't matter. It just means that it's not as important as some of these other things. So I would say the reason why you probably see so much language around belonging and inclusive culture is we know that that is really important to increasing the retention rates of those whose intent to turn is higher. And most organizations, it's when they're actually cutting the data by gender and race minimally, they're finding that for women and people of color, the intent to turn is often higher than for other groups. Thank you for your question.
Great, and thank you for that response. The next question gets at the issue or question of exemplars, role models in a way. Do you have stories of managers who are exemplars of these virtues or organizations that have effectively encouraged and cultivated these virtues?
Oh gosh, it's so hard. I always worry about moral licensing, right? So I always worry about telling people that this is good or these folks are good, because then it makes you think that you only have to aspire to be that and not do more. So as opposed to naming people and organizations, let me talk to you about some signs that you might want to look for as you're trying to figure out, like, this is a manager who is doing a great job. And side note, probably should continue to do more of that and some other stuff to be even better. And here are signs out of organizations that are doing a good job, but everybody can do more, right? So managers who are doing a great job are taking the time to not only check in with people who are new to the team or the organization, they're also taking the time to check in with people who are underrepresented in some capacity, because they have the social intelligence to know that it can be a much lonelier experience when you are new and when you are outnumbered on a team. These same managers who are doing a good job are also openly talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. They are not shying away from the conversation, no matter how awkward or uncomfortable it is. they are reaching out to their Black colleagues or their Asian colleagues, the people who are part of their team, and saying, I just wanted to let you know I'm thinking about you as I'm listening to the events that are happening. I can imagine that this might be difficult for you. I just want to let you know that I'm here to talk if you need someone to talk to. They're doing a good job. With respect to organizations that are doing a good job, they're not just measuring their success by how many things they're doing, right? They're actually beginning to look at outcomes. They're trying to understand, is what we're doing actually worth it? Whether that is, are we seeing our engagement scores improve in relation to our diversity, equity, inclusion work? Are we seeing our teams become more inclusive? So these are really important. But at the end of the day, these organizations that are doing a good job aren't waiting for investors to pressure them to begin to be transparent about their outcomes or what the composition of their workforce is. They're doing it on their own. So that's become a thing recently. It's been necessary to invite some of the companies on the sidelines who have been sitting out of the diversity conversations. They've needed investors to pressure them to say, we're going to vote against you if you don't begin to help us understand what you're doing, because we think that there's a risk to our investment if we don't know what's going on with respect to diversity and inclusion. So that's been a new conversation. But there are companies that were being transparent about what they were doing and what they where they still needed to go before there was this pressure. So I hope that gives you a good understanding of what you can look for if you're trying to assess for yourself whether these managers are doing a good job or whether these organizations are doing a good job as well.
Wonderful. Thank you. So I know we're almost out of time. So I think that this might be our last question, but it builds, I think, pretty well on the question that you've just answered. And this is from, and forgive me if I mispronounce this, Cleo Akravu, who asks, there are organizations which have found ways to succeed, even though they've lacked virtuous management or virtuous managers who are leading the organization. How can we help teach our students to also be prepared to do something if they find themselves in such organizations? So it's basically a question about how to empower those who might not be in leadership roles, but who find themselves in organizations where the work needs to be done, but the leaders aren't doing it.
Yeah, so I think part of this, the answer to the question is challenging the notion of what success means. And so if by success, you mean that the company is making a lot of money, you can look to financial organizations like private equity and hedge funds. They're making a killing when it comes to financial returns. But those aren't the only metrics of success. And this is where I feel like the investor conversation where they are pressuring these individuals to do more is actually helpful. They're saying that's not the only metric of success because we feel like there are risks in your organization because you're not paying attention, for example, to diversity, equity, inclusion. And so while it looks like you're making success, that success can potentially be threatened because you're not being equitable and inclusive, all right? So there's that side of the conversation. But that's, you know, not a conversation necessarily for an individual contributor who doesn't feel like they have a strong voice. But there's so much that can be done if you're an individual contributor. So much of what has happened in organizations with respect to diversity, equity, and inclusion, if we're talking about employee resource groups, or if we're talking about happy hour Fridays where people have conversations with team members, this is not coming top down. This is actually coming bottom up. So much of the DEI work you're seeing is the outcome of bottom up individual contributor processes, starting the conversations, engaging more and more people, and then people at the top saying, ah, this actually seems like a good thing. I think we're on to something. So even though it looks very top down because that's what makes the news, I want to challenge you to really understand that so much of what you're seeing is coming from the ground up. And so that means that you too can start something, start an initiative in your organization and help drive it forward as well.
Wonderful. And what an appropriate way, I think, to wrap up this part of our time together with giving us a sense of empowerment. And a reminder of the work that we all have to do in this area. Thank you so much, Dr. Currie, for your time, for this talk, for what you've inspired us to carry with us as we move forward.